Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome to another episode of the PRFJ Bullet. This is one of your hosts, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we also have Mama, known as Mary Ann Williams, around everybody else. So how you doing this evening, Mama?
I'm just doing fine, thank you. And I would just like to say good evening to my PRF family, and I welcome everyone to the show. Thank you.
Amen, amen. We will have two guests that I will introduce in just a moment, but I just want to tell everybody, thank you for being so diligent. We've had a lot of response this month as we've been dealing with Black history on the PRF table every week. It's not really been about it being a monthly series, but we figured that it was just a good time to talk about Black people and Black economics and things that are surrounding the Black church. And so this series has really been Black Money Matters. And so if you've been with us, you know that we've been dealing with money and how it affects Black people in different communities, not just in my community, but communities all across this country. And we've had a slew of guests that have been on and have graced us with their presence. The gloves came off last week, Mama. That's all I will say. The gloves came off last week. I had to do something I never did before. I had to mute everybody's microphone. I had to just put everybody in my mouth and restore order and justice. But I can assure you, those who have come back since last week, we won't go through that this week. We know we have some guests that are going to be very passionate about their individual institutions and what they do day in and day out. But we're really just going to get down to it. And for those who were with us last week, don't be discouraged about what you heard, because a lot of times when we're dealing with some of the conflicts that come from these socioeconomic matters that we're always dealing with day in and day out, sometimes you just have to let people go. And I don't say go at it in a negative way, but get what's inside of them out so that we can move from conversation to dialogue. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're finishing up our Black History series, and we're talking from the title of Relationships Between Black Banks and Black Churches. And if you go to our website, prfministry.org, or you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/PRFPRF, you'll see that I have a couple of questions that we posed. And we're going to try to deal with them however we deal with them. But I want to bring our first guest on. This lady here, I had the pleasure of meeting and sitting down and talking with several weeks ago. And as I was thinking about what we're dealing with Black history, one of the things that came up, and all of you know who've been with us, I've been reading this book, Black Wall Street, and I have another book called The Rise and Fall of Black Wall Street. And it talked about the economic status and the unity and the power that Black people had in this country from the late 1800s till 1921, when it all came crumbling down. And one of the things that it had, and I may have read some of this last week, but it talked about at the height of the prosperity in North Tulsa or Greenwood Avenue, which is where it was known as Black Wall Street. It talked about so much that we had, that our ancestors had, as Black people. It talked about we had 6 real estate agents and loan officers and 2 garages or filling stations and 5 contractors or building individuals and 2 dressmakers and 4 shoemakers and repair shops and 10 tailors and a printer that had $25,000 worth of equipment, 12 barbers, 3 hairstylists, hairdressers, beauty salons, 5 cleaners and hatters and dyers and the number of plumbers, an upholsterer, 2 photographers, a jeweler, 15 physicians, dentists, and surgeons. It also talked about the school and all that was going, that had gone into making sure that our young Black men and women were very, very educated. And it talked about the different type of classes that were held, classes that we don't see. You got to be in a magnet program in some communities to be in some of these classes that he had, some of the physics classes and the bookkeeping. And the reality was, they had their children, they had our children in those type of classes because we were in a community that we were concerned about how our children were being educated so that they can be those entrepreneurs, those business persons. And I thought about something a couple of weeks ago. I thought about the Black Bank. And I remember well over 10 years ago, it probably was about almost close to 14 years ago, if I can remember correctly, but our guests will correct me if I'm wrong. But I remember in the city of Columbus, Georgia, there was a black bank called Citizens Trust Bank. And this bank was based out of, or is based out of, Atlanta, Georgia. They were bringing this bank to Columbus, Georgia, where I was living at the time. And one of the things that I remember during that time was I remember going into the bank because I heard about it, and I heard they were trying to get support, and they needed 3,000 people that said they were going to open up accounts. And so I wanted to be one in that number. I wanted to do what I could do to support a black bank. Look, I was almost 4 years old, and I had never been involved with a black bank, never seen it. I grew up in Philly and never knew about a black bank. And so I decided to go and support. And one of the things that happened was when I went into that branch at that time, I told the people in the branch, I said, look, I'm thinking about, you know, putting my money into this bank. I'll bring some over here just to be a supporter. But if I'm going to bring all of my money over from the white bank, when I walk into this bank, I want y'all to know who I am. I don't want to be just a number. And so I was able to get that, and I was very appreciative of that, and they honored that. And then I thought about it. Here we are today, 2016. I'm talking about black economics. And I'm talking about the socioeconomic status of black people. And I thought about how, what happened to Citizens Trust Bank? And I know they moved into a bigger and better location on Macon Road in Columbus, Georgia. And I thought about, I said, well, let me see who's running this branch right now. And I saw who it was, and this is who our guest is tonight. Her name is Ms. Tasha Tony, and the official title is Financial Relationship Manager, but to me, she's the bank president. That's what I consider her as. So I just want to welcome Ms. Tasha Tony to the PRF table and allow her the microphone for a few minutes just to tell a little bit about herself and what's going on there at Citizens Trust Bank. Ms. Tony, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
We're good. We are good. Again, I just wanted to open it up to you and let people know who you are and some of the things that you've been able to do, especially being there at Citizens Trust Bank.
Well, my name is Tasha Tony. I've been with the bank here in Columbus for 11 years. I started out at the location down at 6th and 11th Street, and then we relocated in 2007 to the Macon Road location. We moved to that location given us, we wanted to put ourselves out there where we're more visible, where we're seen, because not everybody in Columbus knows about us. Not everybody knew where we were at, because if you're familiar with Columbus, that little spot where we were at, you were kind of tucked away.
Right.
So we came down to the Macon Road, which was the old CB&T building, to relocate, to kind of build it. And we've been successful thus far, and we're still trying to get our name out there, because still there's not a lot of people that really know that we're here or who we are. So, you know, during the Black History Month, we try to promote. And this year has been a better year. People have really started coming in and inquiring. We try not to stick with the brand of we're black-owned, but we are black-owned. We have been alive and thriving since 1921. We have several locations in Atlanta. We have two in Alabama. And like I said, we're continuing to try to grow the location here in Columbus. We do everything that the other banks do, from checking accounts to small business loans to commercial loans. So, you know, we're here. I just want everybody to kind of get familiar with us and introduce myself to everybody through the broadcast. So hopefully that'll get people to come. It'll prompt you to come. It'll prompt more calls from people to know that we are here, and we are here to help.
Amen. And I'm going to tell you something. One of the things to all of our listeners, when I was sitting down with Ms. Tony, I wanted to know some of the real deal, and prayerfully she'll bring out some of the real deal about what's going on. And I was concerned. I was concerned, and I was almost ashamed, because I said this to her, and I'll say it openly on the air. Y'all know me. I'm transparent like that. I thought about it. I said, I'm going to ask this, you know, before I knew who you were. I said, I'm going to ask whoever's running the bank to come on to the PRF table to talk about black banks, the relationship between black banks and black churches, and I don't even have an account there. And I'm funny. I was just like, you know, in some respect, I was like, how dare I? But then I said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and do something about that to fix it. Because just because I didn't at that time doesn't mean that I can't. And one of the things that you said to me, Ms. Tony, was it doesn't have to be all of the money. It can be some of the money. And I want us to kind of keep that in mind, because I think we're creatures of habit, and some of us don't want to step away from certain things. So really, if you can, in this opening segment, if you can just talk to us, because, you know, it's not just black folks on the PRF table. I mean, all of us are black as far as the hosts are concerned, but we have people listening from different demographics and racial compositions. But in this community, can you just tell us what are some of the challenges that are out there with the name of a black bank and or in the community that we're trying to serve or that you're trying to serve here in Columbus, Georgia?
I think a lot of it comes from people really don't know who we are. They never knew where we were. And then it's just putting your trust in us. You have a lot of people that, you know, they just have a lot of trust in the bank where they're at because they've been there for years. But like I was telling you, start small. Start with a savings account. Come in and see what we're about. Test the waters, you know, just let us introduce ourselves to you. Show you what we can do. Show you what we can provide, because we provide a lot of services that people don't know about. We're here to kind of help you rebuild yourself, reestablish yourself, and we can also give you financial literacy to help you get to where you need to be. I think it's just the fear of not knowing what we're about or what we can do, because you're so used to a Wells Fargo and a CB&T. And I think it's just the fear and the education of knowing that we're here and we can do the same things as the other banks can do and provide. And I think if we can get them over that hump, that'll start bringing a lot of people in.
You said something kind of interesting when you talked about the trust factor, because you weren't here when Citizens Trust first came to Columbus, or you weren't the one who is in that position that you're in right now.
Right.
What are some things that you can think of that we can do as a community, especially as black people in this community, to kind of combat some of the trust issues? And the reason I ask that is we as a people, we bank with whoever we bank with. And so I have to say that most people in Columbus do not bank with Citizens Trust Bank. We bank with the variety of the other banks, which none of them are black banks, regardless if they're a large bank. Go ahead.
And I think it's because they think that we're not able to do some of the things that they're able to do over there. Or it's just a trust issue because we're black owned. But we're FDIC insured just like the ones across the street. And we provide the same type of services that they do. I think a lot of it is just that they don't think we can provide the services, or they don't know that we do provide the services, so they're kind of apprehensive about it. And then I think it's just an overall trust issue. They're having to learn how to trust us because we are black owned. I think that's just a brand that we've been branded with. But, you know, we're just like the other banks. We run by the same regulations. We're audited just like the regular bank. So I think it's just to if we can get them in there and show them what we can do and instill that trust in them, I think they'll break the barriers.
And I'm going to tell y'all something. For those of you who are listening, you know, one of the things that we should really be considering is, and I'm going to take it back to Black Wall Street. You heard the list of, and that's not a complete list, but it's a lot of what they had, what our people had in Black Wall Street during the time of Black Wall Street. And I want to think about it like this. All of those things that I mentioned, all of those businesses, those were black-owned businesses. And the reality is, where do you think they banked? They banked right there inside of their community. And if they banked right there inside of their community, maybe there was more accountability to that black institution, because the black institution knew how important it was for those businesses, because they couldn't go and get loans from other places. That's one of the issues that one of the concerns that white people had during that time, especially the KKK. So I'm going to say white people and the KKK. Some of the white people, you know, definitely were the KKK. But that was some of their issue. They were too unified. They were too strong. There was a church, Ms. Tony. They had 13 churches during that time on Black Wall Street. Where I live now, presently, there's 13 churches on a two-mile stretch of land.
Right.
But they had 13, and all of them were black.
And I think if we start with the churches.
Say again?
start with the, I think if we start with the churches and go out to some of the churches and introduce ourselves and show ourselves, I think that would kind of help with the barriers because they're seeing us in person.
Yes.
They're able to ask questions. They're able to ask things that they may not want to ask if they were to come into the bank, is to come out and visit some of the churches, come out and teach some of the literacy, come out and explain some of the products and services that we have to offer, or take the questions that they may have for us to make them feel more comfortable and secure with us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a start.
And so I think that's a good segue. We have another guest on the show tonight, and this is who I would say is a good friend of mine. I knew there was something special about this brother when I was first introduced to him by another good friend of mine. And I can tell you that I think it had to have been last month sometime where they had their denominational annual conference, and I traveled to Atlanta, and I was going up there, and I was pleasantly surprised that this brother was, I would say, preaching slash teaching slash giving us the business slash having a good old time during the message that evening. And this is none other than Pastor Javon Jackson, who is the pastor of Holsey Monumental CME Church in Columbus, Georgia. So we want to welcome him to the show. Pastor Jackson, we just want to say good evening to you. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Good evening. I'm well. How are you all doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Well, Pastor Jackson, give us a little bit of your bio, if you will. Don't be so humble about it, and don't have me breaking out what I got down on paper. Just go ahead and tell us who you are, what you've done. Tell us a little bit about your church, where you're located at, and then let's go from there.
Wow. First, let me just preface it by saying I'm blessed. I come from Augusta, Georgia. I was educated in the Richmond County school system. I had the privilege of attending Payne College. HBCU down in Augusta. I actually have a master's from education, so that shows some of my passion. I'm also an educator here in Columbus at Early College teaching math. I also served as a senior pastor of the Holsey Chapel, and I've been blessed to pastor both Holsey Monumental and Holsey Chapel here in Columbus. I've been pastoring for about 10 years now, and so I just think God has done some tremendous things in my life, and it helped me to bless so many others. And I also have my Master's of Divinity from the ITC. And so my background, my passion is really for our people. That's where our focus is. Noted self-proclaimed liberation preacher, liberation theologist, and that's where our focus is. So listen, I'm glad to be on the show tonight and to discuss this very important topic.
Amen. And let me say this. The community that your church is located in, give the listeners, those who are not from the Columbus, Georgia area, what is the community like where your church is actually physically located at?
Yes, it's a community called the Liberty District. Very historic in Columbus, once was bubbling with activity, was the hub of the African-American community. But, of course, as we progressed, we moved out of the city, moved into the suburban areas. It's kind of, it's not necessarily blighted, but it's on the way. We lost a lot of resources. There have been some efforts at redevelopment that have become stagnant, and we need to be careful about those particular redevelopment efforts as to make sure our people are not systemically moved out. But we're looking to reclaim that place, for us. A lot of churches in that area, the Liberty Theater, historic African-American theater, sits right across the street from us. So, again, we just want to bring that back to the of what it was, that's the hub for African Americans.
And I'm going to tell you, one of the things that and this is what I'm thinking about, I know that area where Holsey is located, and I've served right around the corner for several years, right there at 815 6th Avenue, so I'm not a stranger to that community. And when I look around and I see what the area looks like, But then I think about things such as, you know, as black people, we spend $1.3 trillion a year as consumers. There has to be something that we can do, and now I'm getting ready to just throw it out there for all three of us to have a conversation, but there has to be some things that all of us can do to kind of help revitalize. And one of the things, and you mentioned about we have to be careful about these revitalization efforts and how people say they want to help some of the areas, but really that may not be what they're really trying to do. That may be for a different show. When I got to go back to Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street in North Tulsa during that time, it had about 90,000 people. 10% of those people were black people. So that was the community, 10,000 black people. So all of those businesses that I mentioned earlier was for 10,000 people. Now, I know in Columbus, Georgia has about, you know, almost 300,000 people in the city. But I know there's a whole bunch of different pockets of the community that if we came together as a community with our various institutions, we can change the different dynamics of the city one community at a time. And so for me, I would say, you know what, since that was an area that may be like Greenwood Avenue, that may be like what was known as Black Wall Street, but here in Columbus, Georgia, that may be like Ridge Avenue in Philadelphia, where I'm from, then we have to begin some type of conversation to make sure that we're supporting each other. And one of the things that I placed out on the flyer for this week, and if after I speak it, I would like Ms. Tony to give a response and Pastor Jackson. But the question that I had in my mind, that I really have in my spirit, is what will happen when two of the most powerful institutions in the black community truly support one another? Now, let me preface this. I'm not trying to pit one against the other, but both of you represent those institutions. Not everybody, but at least within our city. So, Ms. Tony, what could really happen? What do you think could happen in the community of the Columbus, Georgia area specifically if the black bank and the black church came together as those two most, what I would consider two of the most powerful institutions that we have in our community?
I think it would show unity. I think it would show that we're all working together for the same cause. I think it would be a very powerful move. I think it'd be one to instill the trust of a black-owned bank and the black churches, mm-hmm. because we've got to start somewhere. But I think it would be a very powerful move.
Pastor Jackson, what's your thoughts? What's the Spirit saying for you?
Same thing. It was said to President, to where these two institutions come together and trust each other. And I think more so that's what our community need to see, the actualism of African Americans mm-hmm. trusting African Americans, working hand in hand, as Ms. Tony said, unity. And I think if that happens, I think we're more powerful than what we give ourselves credit for.
Oh, yeah.
I think the dynamics of rebuilding our communities, and in a sense, if we can start here, it'll lead to a place of where we're not dependent on other entities to take care of us. We shall be able to take care of and it's not something that's new. As you've already mentioned, it's something we were accustomed to. I think if we give that motto again, we can get back to that place of being dependent upon each other, going back to this idea of community and our ancestral roots, that we're about the village. And so if we can get back to the village concept, we can see the areas that have been neglected, don't seem, and I'll put it like that, don't seem to get as much support as other areas, we can build those places back up.
And I'm going to tell you, one of the, for PRF, for those who may be listening for the first time, but PRF has two foundational scriptures. One is out of the book of Acts and the other is out of the book of Kings. And just thinking about what you just said with both of you, matter of fact, have just said when it comes to community, that touches on both of our foundational scriptures for this particular ministry. And And it's Acts chapter 2, verse 42 to 47, when it talks about the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship and the sharing of meals and to prayer. And Ms. Tony, you hit on it. There has to be an educational component involved if we're going to come together, because there's a lot of things that are already barriers that we're already dealing with that we may not be acknowledging. So somebody may not be coming to Citizens Trust because of something that they heard from somebody else. They may not be coming to Citizens Trust because they only heard from somebody, not because they walked into your institution, but they heard from somebody that the rates are too high. So if we can get to back to, as you said, Pastor Jackson, this place of community, this is not new. So if we're taking it from a biblical perspective and we use this as a foundational scripture, we have the ability to do, because in the later part of that particular text, it talks about how they shared with one another. They brought the money to the apostles' feet. They weren't scared to share among each other. And let's take it back to Black Wall Street. During that time of Black Wall Street, I don't know all the dynamics that happened, just like I don't know all the dynamics and exactly how it actually worked in the book of Acts chapter 2. But the thing that I know, the history shows that they did it. So really, the only thing that I think that we can do now, y'all, is we have to have these conversations. We have to have education to be able to do it if we want something better than what we've been given. It kind of bothers me, Ms. Tony, that we bank, and I'll go, I guess I'll press in on this. We bank wherever we bank, and we don't ask any questions.
Right.
We don't ask any questions. We don't ask questions about who's running the bank, Pastor. We don't ask them questions. We see the one person, but who's really behind all this operation? We don't ask those questions. We don't go in there. We don't go into our normal, I won't even say normal. We don't go into the white institutions, the white financial institutions, looking for the hookups. We don't go with an expectation. We don't do all of that. They say, you know what? If you put your money into this bank, if you put it into an IRA right now or a CD, right now CDs are giving this, we'll take it. So my thing is, and this may be another question, are there any barriers that we really need to get out in the open? And I know, Ms. Tony, you mentioned that, you know, trust is one, and that's a big one. But do we even know that it's a trust issue? And so if we have barriers, if there's other barriers that are out there, I want us to talk about them so we can at least start a conversation about how do we break down those barriers. Because my goal for us leaving off the air tonight is that we have some type of framework, or we're building some type of framework in this one community because we're all here. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Mm-hmm. So other, Ms. Tony, other than the trust, what else is there? What else do we need to do? Because sometimes we just got to be told what we need to do. And I'm just big on that.
It's a trust issue. It's an issue where they think that maybe we're not able to offer services that the other banks offer. I think sometimes it's that, you know, they want us to be a little lenient. And, you know, we're not able to be lenient per se, you know, but we do go that extra step to help you get to where you need to be. When you go into one of the Citizens Trust Bank branches, no matter Columbus, Atlanta, Birmingham, at least you get to meet and you know who the manager of that particular office is. The doors are open. You can talk to them, have a conversation if you're upset about something. Whereas when you're here, you're just a number at a CB&T or a Wells Fargo. You have to wait, or they may not even have a manager on duty at that particular location. But we are a community bank. We're able to do that one-on-one with you. If there's churches or any individual that needs some literacy, we're here to teach literacy. You know, we're not just here to take your money and give you a receipt. We're here to do whatever we can to help you. We may not be able to fix every problem or grant every loan or open every checking account, but we can tell you what you need to do. We can offer you alternatives. So I think knowing that, maybe that will open the door to at least have them come in and prompt or ask a question, have them come in to see what we can do. Then they can see that trust barrier is coming down, and you can trust us. You can trust us just like you trust the ones across the street. It's just how to know, we need to know what the want is and what the need is in the community in order to fix it and to move on.
Okay. Pastor Jackson, I'm going to throw the mic to you. Are there any barriers that that you can see for why, and I hate to put this on you to speak for all churches, all the black churches, but we're connected enough that we kind of know a lot about what we think and how we handle some of our businesses as institutions. So what does it mean? Is there anything that you can think of that could be a barrier other than what she's mentioning to why we just historically are just not even supporting this institution that is not just there in the community, but definitely there for us?
Yeah. Dr. Nate, I hear you saying, you know, something else, but I think what she hits on so big, because the trust issue, you know, even just coming back to the institution of the church, a lot of your churches, most of the issues start in the finance room, whereas we don't even trust some of our own people with our money. And I think that strives so much down, and I'll just go ahead and say, I think we haven't liberated ourselves from thinking master knows what's best for me.
Mm.
As far as what you were hitting on, master knows bad master. And so we're still anchored in the slave mentality, a mentality which in so many ways pitted us against one another and taught us not to trust each other. And that was the very mechanism, as you said, for breaking our unity, using those who would the planning people and whatnot. It's just stayed for so many generations that I think that's the biggest issue. Like I say, it's not even just pertinent from church to bank, but in our own finance rooms, we don't trust people. What are you going to do with the money? It doesn't help when we do have the issues around our institution, the church's institution, where you see the things, but I mean, there's so many instances where people are doing what they're supposed to do. And so I think that's the biggest thing is building our trust, being intentional in building our trust, and really liberating ourselves, again, as to the point I said earlier, to recognize that as African Americans, we are capable. We are capable. We can do it. We can handle it. And unfortunately, you do have some who are thieves, or there are some in every race that are thieves. And we work, you know, we work above those. We do.
Yes.
What we do. So it has to be an intentional move among pastors, such as myself, to seek out these various institutions. I think, you know, the banks, they help us by knowing, you know, letting us know, hey, we're here, can we come talk? And then we have to work as a progress to liberate our minds, to think that, you know, somebody else always knows what's best for my money. Or, this is a place of, I also suggest that it's a place of, as we integrated, the village concept was lost, and we lost the idea of, you've heard of the Sankofa. We lost our ability to go back and reach our own. We started seeing stars that we could reach for, and we forgot to bring everybody else with us to reach the stars. And I think, whereas integration, don't get me wrong, I think has, you know, benefited us in so many ways, we also lost a lot of our self-identity and that ideal village. So I think trust is a big issue, and, you know, being intentional about building that trust. Yes, sir.
And may I add?
Go ahead, Mama. Go ahead.
I worked for AT&T, and one of the biggest issues was gossip. Now, you know that AT&T is in the top 25 companies, and the gossip was so severe in there, and to management had us all to sign a form saying if we gossip, you know, we'll be released. And another issue I see is that when you own when you go to work, it's a team effort. It's not an I effort. You know, it's not I'm going to you know I'm working for this quote black bank here, and I'm going to let them know, you know, that I really know about finances, et cetera, et cetera. We must go in with the attitude that I am part of this team, and if this team is successful, I'm going to be part of the success of the team. And so, and mm-hmm. egos have to be put aside, because with one, I've seen it, I'm telling you, when one gets a promotion, that's when the gossip starts, because I had my degree from Yale, and why did this one here get it? She got hers from Princeton. I mean, the foolishness has to be put aside, and we have to be professional, professional, you know. And when and even the banks that I have gone into, you can just see some is just there, hair looking any kind of way. I barely made it in, you know. And, I mean, you know, the leader of the team has to stress total professionalism. And I know I come from the old school, but I just don't think it's appropriate when, you know, we should, as women, we should dress appropriately and businesslike. You know, the tie should be, you know, your blouse need to be up a little bit, you know what I'm saying? You know, because you're not there, you know, only for one purpose, to show people that you want to help them. And it's kind of hard, you know, especially if it's a man, and, you know, we as women, we're not dressed appropriately. You know, that's distraction. And that tears down that professional look also. And mm-hmm. when I was working for also another electronic data systems, and I was a team leader, and the skirts had to be right below your knee. And it was such an effort to get people to do it, until we had to send people home, you know. Well, and so we have to, I mean, with all that being said, we have to want to succeed as a team. I'd be so happy and excited, just like I was excited about AT&T. You know, I should be also excited if I'm to work, if I'm working in a black corporation, you know, and have the desire to want to see the banks succeed, you know, not to just go there to see can you get some training so you can move on some to another bank. No, I want to be on this. I want to be on this team here because I'm excited about what my culture is doing. And without that passion, excitement, that's when you're going to get the gossip and everything. And the gossip just need to be stopped right outside the door. You know, you don't want to hear about what happened the night before and all day. Keep it focused. Keep it focused. Amen.
And let me say this. I think I understand where Mama was trying to go, so I'm going to just take it on home. You know, if there is a perception of black people, then that can have something to do with other people patronizing black businesses. So a black financial institution can be looked at the same way when you go down to a certain business that is a black-owned business, and you see their professionalism or lack thereof, you see how their staff interact, and you see how the culture is, I can see how it can be easily a perception in the mind that all black businesses are like that. And so what we have to do, let's make it practical. If any of you are listening have had a bad experience with a black institution, not necessarily just a black financial institution, then give the black financial institution a try. I think that's a good one for you, Ms. Tony. Don't take the perception of a negative experience and take it and say, well, I'm not going to support the black-owned bank because I've had this negative experience somewhere else. The reality is this. I've had problems with the financial institutions who are not black. I've had problems with them, but I still stayed.
Exactly.
I went to the movies last week, and it was in a rated R movie, and there was somebody who had their children inside this rated R movie, but I still stayed. I'll still go back to the same movie theater. So we would do whatever we want to do if we want to do it. We just have to have a mindset. And Pastor Jackson, you hit on this. It has to be a renewed mind. Let's go and let's just break down Romans 12, 1 and 2. Let's renew mind so that we can have an understanding that, you know what, let me give these institutions a try. Because at the end of the day, if we don't support it, who else is going to support it? And maybe, Ms. Tony, I don't know if it's something that you can put out there, but can you tell us what does the support look like here in the Columbus, Georgia area?
I mean, we have good support. I think it could be better.
Okay.
I'm here to do whatever I can to make it better, but I need to know, I need help from the community to know how to make it better. If they've had a problem or if they are having a problem, okay, I'm there. Come to me, bring it to me, let me address it. Let's see if we can work it out. Let's see what we can do together. Because like she was saying, just because you had a bad experience at this black business doesn't mean you're going to have a bad experience over here. Or you have to at least let someone know that you had a bad experience and give them a chance to fix it or resolve it without going out gossiping about it, because you may tell this person, but by the time it makes it to that fifth person, it may not even be the way that it really was. So I think we just need an opportunity to address whatever it is, and I think we can move forward. I think we could grow it together, but we've just got to know how to grow it together.
Yes. Pastor Jackson, I'm about to... Let's spend some time and let's just get raw with this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've heard you before, my brother, so I know you. I know you. You being nice tonight. We got 20 minutes left for the show. I know how to pull it out of folks. Let me tell you why. This is just me. I can't say this is for all the hosts at the PRF table. But here's something, and I shared this with Ms. Tony. This is one of the things I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday mornings,
mm-hmm.
not just in your community of Columbus, Georgia, but in Philly, in North Carolina where Mama is, over in Texas where Adia is, down in Florida where Brother Feaster is, in Atlanta. But on Monday morning, something happens. Money is taken. The money that people of God give for the building of the kingdom, and you know I'm going here, this money God has blessed us with through our jobs, our retirements, our capital gains, through selling the DVDs, the bootleg, and everything else, and that money comes into the church. And then on Monday morning, it goes to an institution. I know down there at Holsey Chapel, y'all don't keep all that money that y'all get from people giving those tithes and offerings. I know y'all just don't keep it up in the safe in the church. And I think about how we know that from an institutional perspective, the black church is alive and vibrant. We got more churches than we can shake a stick at. Even in the Columbus, Georgia community alone, there's a lot of black churches. So all that money gets put into financial institutions. And I don't know the percentage, Ms. Tony, but I want to believe that most of that money doesn't go to Citizens Trust Bank. That's my perception. I don't know, but that's my perception, Doc. And I think about how since that money is going somewhere, there is no real accountability with that institution to be able to say, the people gave this for the upbuilding of the kingdom, to go towards godly things. So we're going to put it here, but you can't do certain things. Like on Victory Drive, maybe it's been about 2 years now, but I was riding, I used to ride back and forth going to Fort Benning, and I would see that there was a sign that says maybe 15,000 square foot. It was a liquor store. And I would see how that was being built. And then I was thinking about, well, more than likely, whoever's building that is probably not coming out of their pocket with the cash. They're probably going through a financial institution. But then and this is my crazy way of thinking, and I said, you know, I bet the money that is going to whoever's using the funds to build this has come, a lot of that money has come from the church going into those institutions.
Oh.
That may be a crazy thought, but y'all know I just think like that. And so my thought was, we should be able to have, if we're bringing in, if this is God's money, if that's what we're saying, right, we should have a little more control in just not giving our money over to Caesar for Caesar to do whatever Caesar wants to do. Because the reality is, some of the things that I see being implemented, being constructed, some of the things that are ungodly are not happening on the north side of town. They're happening on the south side of town. The reality is, I know good and doggone well they wouldn't have put that 15,000 square foot liquor store up there at that new mall. Nah, not gonna happen. Not gonna happen. So I'm just making this case that just because when the money comes in, there should still be some type of godly accountability of where it goes after it comes in from the people. And I don't know, Ms. Tony, I mean, y'all please jump in, but I want to believe that if Ms. Tony is coming and we're educating the people about Citizens Trust Bank, that now Pastor Jackson, Minister Dunlap, whoever can say, okay, now, you know, we don't want to be a part of no foolishness. I don't know how we can stop that, but I think there should be some understanding that, hey, this is not a good thing. So, Ms. Tony, Pastor Jackson, I'll let you hit it first, Jackson.
That's loaded. That's loaded, and it'll take a definite relationship and a definite communication. And I think you even crossed over on some lines, because the struggle we have, even in the vibrant Black church, is that everybody don't see Caesar wrong. Some folks want to be in cohorts with Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's until we reclaim the godly principles for what it's intended fully, it's an uphill battle, but it's a doable battle. And I think if we could group with an institution who would have those same mindsets, I think, I think we could make some noise. I think we could just get to the point of being in positions to facilitate the kind of change we want to see in our communities. And now, because of lack of unity, we can. So that's why a 15,000 square foot liquor store can come be placed in our community. That's why we can have 35,000 Family Dollars and Dollar Generals all building up, unkempt, all in our communities. Because now we, even though we have all this buying power, it's not unified, and we can't say anything at the table. And so that's until we get to the point where we realize our power and come together and use it. Some of our people who walk in our churches will walk down the street with Caesar to that 15,000 square foot liquor store. And so what you're saying is going to be a push. It's a push for us. But again, a word I used earlier is intentional. And I'm just talking about my institution now. If we're going to be the church, we got to be the church.
Yes, sir.
We're going to be the
church,
reflective of God. We got to make up in our mind. That's what we're going to do. If it means sacrificing to come together, if it means I might not be able to hit every SunTrust branch around, but I'm going to make my way to Citizens. Because particularly that's what got us through the movement. If you look at it, Birmingham, I'm going to have to walk. But because this is the cause, I'm going to walk today. I'm going to get these miles in today because I'm committed to this cause. Until we get all of our people to stop working in cohorts with Caesar, to get back to the village mentality, we're going to keep having those instances of our money supporting infrastructure that we really don't need, that's really hurting us. We don't need another liquor store. We don't need another tidal pond in our neighborhoods. But we're going to keep building them until we come together and say, all right, that's enough.
Miss Tony, let me do this. We have a caller that's been waiting patiently, so please hold that comment, if you will, if you have one. So let me go to the phone lines. We have a caller from Last four of 1259 out of Philly. Is this my cousin Saeed?
Well, yes, it is, young brother. How are you?
Good evening, brother. Good evening.
Good evening. How is everyone? You know, I could not avoid calling in. I wrapped my class up, and I said, I got a chance, call in. I saw some messages going back online. I said, it sounds like this is one I need to really, really listen to. So,
amen.
You asked the question that you asked, and the brother was, I like his answer. He kept it PC as he could. He tried to walk that tight line. If I'm not sure if they heard my when I was on last weekend or not, but I'm going to probably not be as PC, but I'm going to try not to be too far left either. Here's my question. Here's my thing. You're right. We can't get in bed with Caesar, but here's my question. Why does the church even feel like they have to get in bed with Caesar? And I'm not asking that from a theoretical perspective, but in the plain and simple truth is, if the money goes into the back room, and we know that there's 50, 60, 70 families in our community that are hungry, that our bills are not being paid, Caesar never had to see that money at all. But the reality of the situation is we want our churches, and I'm using that as a broad sense. I'm not talking about just the church from a Christian perspective, but any institution where we go to worship, we want them to look nice. We want to go and we want to prop them up. But the reality of the situation is, I'm going to say what I said last week. If the church is standing on $50 million, but the community don't have $50, then what use is the church? And I'm just going to call it what it is, because if you think about it, you know, we want to go to the scriptures, and you know me, Nate. You put the book in front of me, we can go down the list. The reality is that none of those who led us in the book went to bed rich. They gave every penny that they collected. When you look at when we talk about the actions of those who we follow, the Jesuses, the Moses, you know, the Jobs, and all the way down the list, if you go down and you look, they went to bed poor. They never said build the church on the money. They said, listen, go out and spread the word and pass it on to the people, but also pass on the wealth for which the church has been built upon. Meaning that if we are not going to, we don't have to give our money to the bank. We don't. But the people are going to keep giving it because we set the example for that's what they only know. They don't know anything else. They only know, give my money to somebody else. That's what we're teaching them. If it's the liquor store, if it's the check cashing place, if it's the payday loan people, and I hate to say it, if it's the church, we teach our people to give our money to everyone else, and we don't show them how to reinvest in themselves. The first, God has to be your steering wheel, not your spare tire. And if God is your steering wheel, then you know that you cannot lay your head down on that pillow if you have not given back to those who are in need. You have to want for your brother what you want for yourself. And our institutions for which we go to are the ones that have to lead that play. We don't want them to go and do the payday loan. You know what? Let them go cash their check at the church, and where the church won't charge them 1%. When you think about that, when the 1%, and you add that 1% up, could cost a family $200, $300, $1,000 per year because they don't understand about the banking institution and how to avoid the charges. Let the church be the place where, you know what, you're hungry. You don't have to go and do these different things. We're going to make sure that those tithes and those givings, we will have a pantry that will feed you when you are hungry. Caesar never has to see see the money. And then the money is recycled right back into the community, and then we lead by example and not by we're only by standing on the pulpit. And that's no offense to anybody. It's just where I, you know, and it happens, and it's not just in the church, but it's in the synagogue, it's in the masjid, it's the same rhetoric. We buy into these concepts, and the only time we bring it to a real light is when something bad happens. We know we're spending $50 million. We know that only our money lasts 6 hours in our community. But why is that happening? Because our institutions are also sending that money out of our communities. We have brain drains. Why? Because as soon as we get our degrees, we move out of our community. We spend so much money on trying to be, I hate to say this, but white is right kind of mentality, that we've lost fact of the fact that we built our communities by investing in ourselves, by putting the money immediately back into the community. And I'm going to say, I'm going to hold everybody responsible, including our churches, mm-hmm. because they're just as guilty every time they deposit that money in the bank, they're just as guilty of sending the money out to community as the individuals who are spending it. And I'll end on that note.
I love that. Cuz we'll see you later. Woo. Now, I don't know why he like to come on to the show in the last 5 minutes with all that. You know, we can't. But let me just say something. He said a lot. He said a lot. And then he was one of our guests, or the guest that we had on our second week, the second week in this month, and it was entitled Investing in Ourselves. So he speaks from a place of passion. And I think he speaks and says a lot that a lot of times a lot of people do not want to say. So, you know, we have to honor and respect the man that can speak his mind and also speak it with clarity. Miss Tony. Now y'all know how we be as the host. I said how we be as the host of the show when we get somebody like Saeed to come on and just throw a monkey wrench in his thing. But it's not really a monkey wrench. At the end of the day, if we're not willing to have these type of conversations, then how can we ever progress? You know, we're talking about Black history, so there is a lot of the historical aspect to why people, all of us, think what like we think and do the things that we actually do. So let's turn it back to Natasha. I'll pass the mic to you. You can come from where we were talking before he came on, or you can, if there was anything that you wanted to hit on from what he said, because again, this whole thing is about building the relationships that we really know we really have to do, and we'll talk about what we're going to do in the next couple of minutes after you speak.
I think just as a community, as a church, as a bank, we just have to come together as one. I mean, he hit a lot of good points. The church is there to help the congregation. They're there to help, just like we're here to help. But you've got to want the help, and you've got to know what to do with the help. It's how I look at it. It's not like we're helping one side to build the other side.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's just with what side. A lot of the developers just look at it as where they're going to make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think as a community, as a church, as everything, we just have to come together, and we have to be able to willing to help the ones out there that need the help, that want the help. And I think that's just going to come to unity.
Mm-hmm. Pass.
You know.
Yes, sir. I didn't know I was going to get that much from Saeed tonight, but we did. I thought that was going to all come from you.
I love what the brother said. This is one of the realities that I say why it even goes to Caesar. This thought, the reality is,
most of your institutions are less than 200 members, and I ain't never seen $50 million.
Good point.
And so that's you know, that's rhetoric we're often faced with. Part of you look at a Holy Chapel who funded the AP3 building, which that's funded totally by AP3, but certainly an outlet for the community. That's one way of building. So I just wanted to address that, because there's often a rhetoric against the church, and that builds not a hatred, but a disguise for the church to say, ain't nobody getting rich but the pastor and the bank.
Mm.
So let me say that first. But it's valid.
Because you're not rich.
Valid. But I hear the point, whereas you do have some, there is a disconnect between the black church and the community. There is. And I think that's the point we're getting at. It often falls on money. But there's so many things that the black church can do in the community. And unfortunately, this time of day, that those things are regulated off money.
Right.
So I want to say that. So sometimes we got to put it in season to make sure we don't spend all the money. but I'll give somebody now to saying, but I think what Tony's saying, again, intentional. Even if we have to seek ways, we have to become more educated. Because if you really think about it, our people, we're just really, after being the position we're in for so long, was 50-60 years removed from segregation, from Jim Carrera's eras, we really don't have too much old money in our system. And so we're really, the idea of having money, and then we got some, and then can I trust other folks with some I'm really just getting to know? Really just getting used to it and managing it. And so we've got to work through that. And it has to be intentional.
Yeah.
And so if what that will look like in our particular community, I need to bring Miss Tony into Holy Chapel. I'm not going to say they're going to be on fire at Holy Chapel to change everything right away, because we know that's not how we work. We need to start. We need to start the conversation. We need to be intentional. Being intentional in things as we go forward, start seeking out. And my mama made a good point. We also have to have an attitude that just because I am black, you supposed to support me because I'm black. We got to have our stand. We have to make, you know, our standards have to be up and whatnot. And so, but I think it's all about intentionality. Do we really want this? Are we comfortable with the way our communities are going? So even the mechanism of the church, are we comfortable giving all our overhead to everything else? So what can we cut back and really digest back into this community? What can we do without in this church? Can we do without a church anniversary dinner? And feed some people in our community. So, like I say, the points were valid. I just don't want the rhetoric that every church sitting on 50 million and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and yes, we have to say those things. I mean,
yeah,
that's what we're doing tonight. We're initiating a conversation, or we initiated a conversation, and I do know that we are definitely within a dialogue, because We're having a dialogue because we're listening to one another. We're hearing one another. It doesn't mean, and this is one of the things that's central with PRF, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree all on the same points. It doesn't mean that we're going to sit down all and agree that we should all go in this one direction and everybody's going to have 100%. It didn't happen like that in the Bible, so we know it's not going to happen in Columbus, Georgia. And Jesus was on walking on this earth. So if it happened when Jesus didn't happen when Jesus was walking on this earth, we know it sure ain't gonna happen when he up. We know that. So one of the things that you get ready to descend, and we're a couple of minutes over, but I think that's fine. The theme that I heard tonight from both of you, excuse me, was that we have to unite. It has to be about unity. We have to have more conversation. It has to be intentional. And one of the things that I guess if I can try to bring up this short, quick point, not to rush anything, but Ms. Tony, one of the things that I've heard
is that there's not enough ATMs throughout the city. And
I agree. I agree with that one.
And in my thought process, my mind, if you're not supporting me, right, if we're not supporting Citizens Trust Bank, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see how you can justify to Atlanta to buy, purchase, and install ATMs all around the city of Columbus, Georgia, if you don't have the support. So if we want more ATMs throughout the city, then that means people, family, listeners, that means we have to support it, right?
Correct.
Now, if it works a different way, let me know, but that, at least that's my thought process. You know, we're not going to get anything if you're not supporting it. They don't put up more Pastor Jackson, the reason they put up more Dollar Generals is because they know folks are going to go into them.
We support them, yeah.
They know that. They know that. This is a conversation, y'all, that is just the start. I really want us to, whenever you can do it, it doesn't have to be a Black History moment or a Black History Month, but I would love for us to come back after we start working on some of these things. Ms. Toni, you have my word. Whenever I'm doing a workshop in the Columbus, Georgia, Phoenix City area, I'm going to bring an invitation to you to come in and talk about what we're talking about tonight. Wherever I go, and we're setting up some now, so I can foresee for the rest of the year definitely having at least 6 workshops in this community. I want you to be able to come there if it fits within your schedule. That's what I'm going to do with my part. So I'm giving you my commitment on air in front of Pastor Jackson and everybody else that we want to partner with Citizens Trust Bank. We're going to do whatever we can do to try to help Citizens Trust Bank to become a better, viable economic entity within this community of Columbus, Georgia. And Pastor Jackson, my brother, thank you for coming on and sharing your words of wisdom and being honest and true to your word. We've been trying to get together for a long time. But, again, what we're talking about needs to be said. We have to do the things that we're doing. And if we don't do it, it's never going to happen. And other folks are not going to make it happen for us. One of the things that I like that you said, and I'm going to give y'all, both of you, for final comments, is you talked about an invitation. And that's so similar to PRF. Because with PRF, we can't come in there and conduct workshops, and we can't walk with the people of the church if we're not invited. So it's the same thing with Ms. Toni, as you were talking about an invitation. Now what we have to do is just figure out when the best time to do it. So with that, I want to just thank both of you, and let me just go to Pastor Jackson for some final comments, anything else that you really want to throw out there to us. And then after that, Ms. Toni, if you can give some final closing comments from your perspective from the banking side, we appreciate it.
Dr. Nate, thank you so much for having me on. And thank you again for your passion to bringing these issues to light in our community. And thank you, Ms. Toni, for what you do for this community. And it's just my prayer that even between us, the 3-4 on this call, that we begin to set and show examples. And so just with the invitation that Brother Nate just gave, we're certainly, I want to be in contact. I think I'll be speaking in a very hypocritical fashion if I'm not in contact. So maybe I can't change the whole church account, but maybe it's 1, 2, or 3 and that deals. But we definitely want support. But and I do ask to be patient with the church, be patient with the church, as there's still some issues very deeply rooted in the institution called the church that we're dealing with. And so very issues to our core, our trusting, our believing in one another, and that we have yet to fully overcome. But I think the more we get there, the more we can work in harmony and unity with other institutions around us. And then maybe when we begin to realize that the whole 50 million, our community would be so much better as we reinvest. And maybe where we're not knowledgeable, the bank does help us to reinvest in that particular community. So I'm looking forward. I'm thankful for being in the conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Ms. Toni?
I want to say thank you for having me on the show. It's been a lesson. I think this is a start to bringing, closing the gap, whether it's starts with the churches or whether it just starts with the community coming together as a whole. And I just want everyone that's listening or anyone that's out there to know that we're here to help. I'm here to help. I'm very passionate about letting folks know that we're here to help in any way that we can, and I look forward to working with you on the workshop. So just, you know, keep me in the loop and keep me informed, and I am excited about it.
Amen. Well, we're about to make it happen. So, again, thank you. Let me end with this. There's a scripture, something that Jesus said. He says that when two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. And so what I would say is it doesn't take, as Pastor Jackson, as you mentioned, it doesn't take everything. And Ms. Tony, Sister Tony, you and I talked about that. It doesn't have to be whole accounts. It doesn't have to be the building fund and the general account. It can just be the building fund. I ain't doing nothing with the building fund anyway. It's been there for 50 years. Go ahead and bring that over to Citizens Trust.
Exactly.
We can do I had to say something there funny in the last couple minutes, but we can do something like that. And if we do something like that, if we start where we are, then I think God will be pleased with our efforts. Jesus did not come and call 100 people. He called one at a time. And then in the end, in the book of John, there was a time when many disciples was following him. And he started to talk about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. And what they said was, Pastor Jackson, this saying is too hard for us.
Yeah.
And then the word said, and then they left him. But then there were still 12 that was there. And the question was, are y'all going to go too? Where shall we go? The reality is we're in this community together. So many of the people in the community are not transplants like I am, coming from someplace else. They grew up here. And a lot of them are not going anywhere. So that's where I can see some are trying to get the mindset changes for people who've been here and know a lot of the history and have developed walking with Caesar, but thinking they're Caesar as their friend. So let us do whatever we can do. For all of our listeners, we will be starting a new series next month. We're just going to have to turn you on to the website, prfministry.org, or the Facebook page, facebook.com/PRFPRF. On behalf of myself, Sister Adia, Mama, a.k.a. Marianne Williams, Shatara Sherwood, Warren Feaster, we thank you all for being with us. We hope that something that we've said over these last 4 weeks will really encourage you to do something different, because we really have the ability to do any and everything. So with that, God bless you. We will talk to you soon. We'll see you next week. Tell somebody about the PRF table. God bless.